Hi, everybody, and welcome back to our Link 2013 Jumpstart.
And we're back, and now you're going to do a demo, right?
Brian? I am. I'm Brian.
I'm still Rui.
And we're still going to be doing a demo. Now, again, this demo is for Call of Mission Control. It's going to be the configuration of Call of Mission Control more than the implementation. Well, it will be implemented. We just won't see it do anything. And again, we have lab limitations. But if you were to take the same concept and take it into your own personal lab and... Again, it's important that you have different subnets that are unique and separate so that we can actually get Call of Mission Control to work over the various subnets. This would work. So let's start. So let's go ahead and we're going to begin by looking at a couple of clients. One's going to be client 2. Client 2 exists in a network that is outside, in our discussion, outside, happens to be 22 as well, but outside of the network that client 1's on. This is a 2020 network. This is a 1010 network. Maybe. So we've expired on. So we're not going to use client 1. We're going to go to client 3. Yay! So we're going to have discussions between where client 3 is at, which technically is the internet, but again, it doesn't really matter because none of this will work. But our lab's expired. So that's new. Every day is a fun thing. Okay. So we're going to start the creation of this process on our control panel. Right, so this is a front-end server. And the first thing we're going to do is say, do we have Call of Mission Control involved? Well, we may or may not. We actually won't know unless we look at Topology Builder. A key thing with Call of Mission Control, like we said earlier, is it is installed on a pool server, but only one pool server per site. So if you have a site of 15 pools, then perhaps you have... one of those sites that you determine to be the one that is the running the PDP services, and he could have, it's going to be highly available, it's going to run across all the front ends, but it's not going to be on every pool within a particular site. So it'll be a little bit more clear once we get to here. So we have two different sites within our configuration. One has a 2010 pool in it, one has our 2013, and then we have our second site. There we go. Me. And in this second site is another 2013 pool. So remember, we have Rome and we have Redmond. Redmond's called on-prem in a site name, and Rome is called Rome. Okay. We can see by clicking on the various sites is called Mission Control enabled. And in this case, it's disabled on on-prem, and it's disabled in Rome. So we will have to go ahead and add it. That's what we want to do. So let's go ahead and edit the properties. And when we decide to enable Call of Mission Control, we're going to have to select which pool do we want it on. Now, it could be on a 2010 pool, could be on a 2013 pool. To make our life more interesting and fun, we're going to keep it on our 2013 pool. We're going to hit OK. And then we're going to want to do the same thing to Rome so that the users that are in this site have their own Call of Mission Control as well. And it's enabled. So now we have Call of Mission Control in Rome. We have Call of Mission Control in Redmond. And of course, now we need to publish. And we'll notice, and let's go back to our discussion about what needs to change when and where. When we publish this, the only places where we actually install new binaries or bits are going to be on our front-end pool servers. The edge servers are ready to go as they are. No new services get deployed. Things are just running and ready and happen, assuming you have an edge server. You'll see the PDP authentication. And I know PDP is interesting that we call it PDP, even though it's CAC, and then it's not CAC, it's PDP, but just remember PDP is CAC and CAC is PDP, especially when we're doing logging, because otherwise we'll be confused. Okay, so we're going to look at our to-do list.
And you're not going to run into PDP, the term, very often, though.
No, only when you're doing logging and when you're trying to capture stuff and in the event logs and then when you're using CLS Logger. So here we look at our next steps, and sure enough, FEO1 and FEO2, that's on the Redmond pool, and FEO3, that's the Rome pool, but no edge servers are required. So we say, okay, simple enough. And we finish this configuration. Now, obviously, we have to wait for things to filter. And because things don't quite work as well as I'd expect them to work at this lab, we're actually going to not cookie cutter, move this to a different VM set that I've set up. We're actually going to use this one and watch it happen, because it's great. And we'll talk about it as things are going on. So let's go ahead and check our status, see if things have replicated. Let's say CDSCS replication status, and we don't have very many, so let's just look for them all. And they're all set to true, so everything's already replicated. Awesome. Now we're going to go ahead and run Bootstrapper. The deployment is the same thing. I prefer running Bootstrapper because it's quicker. I don't need to wait for it to figure out if I need to do it. I'm telling it needs to do it, and so it just happens. So deployment, and I'm going to do Bootstrapper, and off it goes. Now again, this is going to have to be run in all three of these boxes. And as it goes through its process, if you ran this and there was nothing for it to do, it would tell you there's nothing to do, just because it wouldn't be doing anything. But as we look at stuff, we're going to see, as it checks stuff, come on. There we go, installing PDP. So there's our name popping up again. Even though it's called Mission Control we installed, we're installing the feature PDP. And that's complete. And we're going to do the exact same thing on, I wonder where his, I never moved it up. Functionality on LS03 and on 1. So let's go to 1. They're not responding yet, but that's okay. They will eventually. Maybe. That's fun. So we have called Mission Control established here. We have it installed. It's finishing up its little routine. The other thing is don't forget to start the service. So we'll do that here as well. 1's still coming up. 3's reconnected. Okay. So now let's go ahead and go to the exact same place. And again, that's your wherever you've installed the link bits at. Come on. And Bootstrapper's the name, and off that goes. While that one's running, we'll do it on 1 as well. Obviously, this can happen all at the same time. Assuming your servers can handle the load, then it's not an issue. Oh, forgot to type M, deployment, and then Bootstrap that one. Okay, so as we're waiting to watch this happen, we can see stuff flowing. PDP is installing on 3. While we're here, let's go ahead and start our CS Windows services, and we'll notice the only one that's not running is RTC PD auth, where the authentication happens on the pools themselves. And as it comes along, maybe, and the core itself, which determines what's going on. We'll see those in the event logs here. So we'll do the same thing, starting the services on 3. And we will start the services on 1. Again, remember, because this is a pool, we have high availability of all of our services, which is really nice because you just get it by having a pool. If you had a standard edition server, yes, it can run called Mission Control, but it is a standard edition server, so you're going to get what you're going to get. Okay, so here, start CS Windows service again, and we'll end up having all 3 of them running. So awesome. We've actually installed, it was that simple. We've just installed Call of Mission Control. It's not doing anything. And that's a good thing because we don't want it doing things when we don't have any information and stuff. Now, here's where we're looking at the event viewer. We can see a couple of things. One, bandwidth policies have started, and we'll see all of the policy engines, and it's configuring itself, making sure that it's up and they say up and running. But you will notice, there it is, that it is a physically disabled service because we haven't enabled it within the topology. So, from an application perspective, RDP core is up and everything's ready to go. We're just not doing anything with it yet. That's a good thing. So that's good. We've just installed it. We don't want it actually doing anything yet. So let's go back to the control panel. And at this point, we're going to build out our network and our configuration. So again, we come to our network config, and everything's a blank slate. Now, as we're building this, typically we want to enable called Mission Control after we've got things configured and ready to be tested. So that as we're entering things, things aren't dynamically taking effect on the network and we don't know what's happening. If things are going wrong and calls start to be denied that should not be denied in places, it's as simple as disabling called Mission Control here. You don't need to uninstall it, and that disables it in the enterprise, and then all calls are just going to flow. And my wife can attest that as I play with things on the network at the house, if I do this and all of a sudden she can't make calls outbound, I get the screaming call, I make this quick change, and within a matter of minutes, calls happen again outbound. It's all good. But it doesn't impact inbound calls, it's just those outbound calls. So, okay, so let's go ahead and we're going to do a region. Now, based off of our topology, remembering that this is what we have on-prem, which is Redmond, and we have Rome, so we have North America and we have EMEA. And we only have two sites, and so it's not an overly complex site, but the communication really is going to be restricted between the various sites. What we're going to see is it dynamically shift the communications within the resource kit tool that we're going to use. Yes, resource kit tool. We don't actually have very many ways to monitor or look short of logs for PDP, but there are some great resource kit tools out there that we can use. Anyway, let's go ahead and go ahead into this. Let's start at our regions. So when we start at regions, we're going to create a new region, and we're going to create this region as North America. Now, we have to pick which site this region is tied to, and of course, this is our on-prem site. And if we have enabled audio alternate pass and video pass, that means it has the options to potentially go optional or different ways should media be blocked. Not enabled, then we can't use audio media bypass pass and get around things and use the edge to get out, things of that nature.
Right? Now, you've already pre-created these central sites, right?
No.
Well, they were just there.
No, these are our central sites are what come from our topology. So central sites are what are physically within here. There's on-prem and on-robe. Those are the sites we're referring to because we have called mission control tied to those particular central sites. So they're listed here. No, we don't have to actually create the central sites. They're actually just sites that are created conceptually in your link topology. Those are different. This is central site. This has nothing to do with sites. That's in our next one. That's, again, yeah, sites is way overused.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have North America. And we're also going to want to make one that is called EMEA because we have Rome. So let's go ahead and call that. And this could be more granular if you had areas where, again, you had the Western United States and you had a large group of users that were on a well-connected network, so we're all logically connected. In our example, we only have two locations, and it's a WAN link between the two. So it is what it is. So a very simplistic configuration. Okay, so now we have our two regions. Great, now what do we want to do? Now we want to tie the regions together. So we have region links, we have region routes. When we make a region link, the region links tie with a bandwidth policy the communication from the two networks together. So let's call this one North America to EMEA region link. And we're going to tie North America to EMEA. And at this point, we don't have any bandwidth policies. And it's potentially that you don't want to ever have bandwidth policies. So at this point, we're not going to specify one, but we haven't created them anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Once that's done, we're going to go to the region routes and link the regions together via the route. So this is how media can flow. So even though there's a region link between things, they need to figure out how media can bidirectionally transfer between one another. What's the flow based off of our physical network? If we don't create this, we will get the system yelling at us that we need a region route because we have region links. If we don't have a region link, this would never happen. So here we're going to create North America to EMEA, and this one's our region route. Okay, so which region's routing to where? North America, again, is talking to EMEA, and the link it'll use to do that is the region link we created. Now we'll commit that. Voila. Okay, so from a very high level perspective, we have two regions. They're linked together with a link. There's no bandwidth policy or limitations on that link currently, and the route between the two is created. That's all good. Now we're going to go to bandwidth policies. Remember when we talked about bandwidth policies, we said in general, it's up to you how you create your bandwidth policies. I like to create bandwidth policies that are based off of functionality or type of circuit that we're using or communication model. You can create as many as you want. They can be different. It's just you have to manage them and you've got to deal with them. So if they're not something that makes sense to you, well, then I guess that's your mess to deal with. So just plan this out and try to keep some sort of common nomenclature to make it easier to function. Okay. So, I guess I should give a shout out to my wife because she did sew in the sides of my shirts to make me not look so fat. these shirts are just big old tennis shirts. I don't understand why Microsoft makes shirts that are the right size and arm length and shoulders, but then are gargantuous. So, yes, my personal seamstress, my wife, took any sides. Apparently, I still look fat because I slouch, but that's okay. It's not as fat as I was in the last session, so everything's better and going. Okay, that was my little time killer. Now we're at bandwidths again. So back to our bandwidth policy. When we look at the bandwidth policy, we want to create one, and in this case, I'm going to create one that's going to be called unlimited. So our unlimited policy isn't really unlimited, but it's the policy that where we're not putting restrictions, but we're putting some sort of restriction as a safety net. Now, in my opinion, these two are flipped. I think the session limit should become before the limit, but the way the GUI is written is audio limit, then session limit. So remember, the first one is going to be your total audio that you're allowing across the network, and then in your audio limit is how much for every audio session. Now, when somebody hits this call admission control policy and it applies to them, 164K of that 10,240K bucket must still be available, even if they only need 60 kilobit of that bandwidth, and it's never returned. As far as that call is concerned, during that call, that's its bucket that it's allocated. So it's something to keep in mind, and as Rui was saying, planning matters a lot, making sure you realize how many calls you have, what your actual bandwidth is here, and then kind of dividing things out so you're not leaving bandwidth on the wayside that you could never use.
Right, so you really want to divide it up into buckets that fit the level of codec requirements that you're
that's
planning
right.
on using.
It's also not uncommon that if we're going to use some sort of, or allow, maybe is a better way, to do policy bandwidth override, that we take our limits, -1 or -2, and actually knock it down so that there's not as much audio limit available, so that when we allow someone to bypass the CAC limitation and make the call, or it's actually receive the call, that person, the bandwidth's there because it's still part of our QoS allocation, it's just not part of a call admission control. Because if in fact we go ahead and use more calls than what we have actual bandwidth for, all calls suffer because all of them start to degrade as far as how what bandwidth's going on and congestion and delays, and that's all bad. So anyway, okay, now we're going to go to our video limit. When we look at the video limit is typically higher than our audio limit, and in this case we make it significantly higher. So we're going to set it, as seen on the display, to 102,400. And then from that, we're going to go ahead and set some sort of limit that we want on our video session limit. And we saw we could go up to 4 megs. We could do all kinds of various things. So let's go ahead and set it to that. Let's say we want to be able to do a nice, big, fat HD video. Okay, we're going to call that one unlimited. Done. Now we're going to go ahead and create another one. And it's going to be to show what a restrictive policy looks like. This is different because a restrictive policy, while they're implemented the same, are used to prevent particular calls from happening, or the total number of calls, either in their totality or in a particular modality. So in this case, we want, when you're on a wireless, to allow very few calls because we just don't have the bandwidth on our wireless, and we've seen poor performance on our particular access points. Now, 2013 supports wireless audio and video just fine, unlike 2010, which we discouraged audio calls over wireless. That's not the case in 2013. However, it's up to you having the correct access points to support all of the features and functionalities. There's a big white paper on using QoS and using media settings on your access points and what your AP should be configured at. So if you haven't seen that, go ahead and check that out. But we're going to set this to 1024, and we're going to set our number of calls to 60. Again, that's because our personal internal network doesn't do well. Now, on our video limit, we're going to set that to 0. Now, you would think, I don't want video, the limit 0. There'll never be bandwidth available to make any calls here, so I'll set my video session limit to 0 as well. But for whatever reason, that's not possible. In fact, when we set it to 0 and hit commit, it'll say, sorry, you have to have at least 100 kilobit because the minimal that you can have from a call is 100. The same holds true for your audio session. If I was to set this to something smaller than what I could, it would tell me, sorry, it's got to be at least 40 because that's the minimum, 39.8 is what the call has to minimally be. So in our case, we'll actually set it to 61 just to be odd. We can set our limit to 0, but we have to put in a value for the video session limit. And it tells you if you don't do it right. But it's just keep in mind, really what's mattering is the limit. So even though you could have a 100K session, there's no bucket to draw from, so no video calls would go through. So now the concept of this is, if I was on a wireless subnet that was defined as wireless, keep in mind, you'd have to have a different subnet for wireless than you do for your desktop, so this isn't going to work. You have a dedicated subnet for wireless, you apply this policy to it, and it is put into an area that is outside of the site, so that we don't have inter-site communication happening, then what's going to happen is an audio call will happen, video calls won't happen over the network. So that's what that is. Okay, so now we've made those two sites. Now we're going to go ahead and create our physical sites. Now again, the sites are parts of regions, and some of this can get confusing when you only have one site in one region. What's the point of having a site in the region as well? But the subnet's tied to the site, and it's for more complex deployments. And so really simplistic ones, it's a little bit more confusing. I'll also say that the design of the network configuration within Call and Mission Control in 2013 and 2010, I don't want to say assumes you're on an MPLS network, but that's what the design structure is built off of like an MPLS network, where you have unlimited between some certain locations, and then you have spokes coming off it that are MPLS-based or not MPLS-based, or however those communications are. So, yeah, you just make it work. So, okay, we're going to go to sites. We're going to make a site for Redmond. And on our Redmond site, we're going to have to tie it to a region. That's our North America region that we already created. And then we're going to pick a bandwidth policy. In this case, we're going to say it's an unlimited bandwidth policy. If we set it to not specified, you really are saying unlimited. You're saying that there is no restriction on the policies. Nothing's limited at all. And off we go. But we're going to put some sort of restriction on it. On the location policy, this is where we were talking yesterday, where if we created a location policy and tied it to a site, this site will tie it to subnets, and that's where LIS and your emergency services all tie together. So this is a nice comeback to how everything's working. Once we bring things back, if you wanted to make a location policy that was site-specific, and again, as a reminder, location policies can be made site or user. Don't be confused. Site here is site, and if we pull up our list, those are our sites in link. If we want to tie it to a site in the network configuration, that's a user policy. And I know that really makes not a lot of sense, but that's just the way it works. So just accept that and move on. Okay.
So what was the difference between the two sites again? Just to recap.
Two sites in location?
Yeah.
A site here is a site policy that uses the topology building. We have two sites, on-prem and Rome.
Okay.
A site here is a networking site we've defined within Call and Mission Control and for location service reasons if we want to tie a location policy to one of these sites and their subnets.
Okay.
So they're completely separate sites.
Right.
Have nothing to do with one another. Okay. We'll go ahead and make a second site, and this one will be our Rome site. And again, we'll tie it to a particular region. In this case, it's the EMEA region. And we don't like the people in EMEA. Sorry, we do like you, but in this example, we don't. So don't take offense. We're going to set you to wireless for all communications from your particular bandwidth within your location. Again, we don't have location policies, so there's nothing to select, and we're going to commit that. Okay, so that's all set. And if in this real-world example, and we're only showing this so we can show how things look, more than likely, we would have nothing set on these two because they are the hubs of their own regions. The communication link restriction would be between the region link and not between themselves and their locations, because there's nobody to talk to, so it really doesn't count, right? Because they're only one in one, so the restriction won't happen. Okay, but now let's go ahead and create some subnets.
Right, that's an important distinction, right? You can't enforce CAC within a region.
Within a site. That's right.
Right, that's the whole point. It's that unit of similar bandwidth, so that you're not going to enforce anything on that.
Right. Okay, let's go make some subnets, and we're going to just make some stuff up here because none of ours apply anyway. So 172.18.0.0. Oops, that's a subnet ID. That's right, that's actually one. And then I have my mask. Now you'll notice a couple of things here. When I'm doing subnets that apply to my called mission control, which also apply to location information services, I am using actual subnets. If you remember yesterday when we were doing our stuff for making our wire maps, we couldn't specify subnets. It was just blatantly 172.18.0.0 and whatever fell into that range. everything is expected to be what it is, and things work or don't work, and that's the way it goes. So anyway, we have more granularity in here, and it has to match. So if even if your IP fell in this range, but your client wasn't configured with a /16 or a 255.255.0.0, it wouldn't apply this policy because it's not an exact match to his particular one. So if you have multiple, you can't do it, I guess the point being, you can't do something global from a LIS perspective. We're looking for particular things, and it can't be general. How's that? Okay, so let's go ahead and create this one. And then we'll go ahead and create a second. And this IP is going to be something in the ventures of, oh, I did this one as a mask 8, just to be, Rome's huge, and Redmond's tiny. So a lot of IPs, and now we have configurations. Now, if we come back to our sites, and we look at Redmond, we'll notice at the bottom we have associated subnets. That's nice. You can see what's there. You can't add or remove them here, but if from a reference perspective, you can view what's associated with this particular site. Also, when we come to a particular bandwidth policy, we can make adjustments here on the fly without having to make new ones or assign different ones, which is really nice if something needs to be tweaked or adjusted globally. We make one change here and it just applies to everything, because everything, like everything in Link, is tied together and just intertwined. It's all the same thing. Okay. So now we have that done. Now, I don't remember if on this particular one, well, first couple things. We'll notice that this starts to apply as far as things are being loaded, but they still don't apply to our configuration because it's not enabled in the environment. And when we go to look at our viewer, which I did make a shortcut, and this is from the resource kit, the PDPmon utility, it will show us what exists in our environment, and it will also show us which bandwidth is currently being used and being allocated and things of that nature. Now again, it's not going to dynamically show that we have anything, but it will show, if this is running, pretty sure I double-clicked it, PDP, maybe not. All right, let me run it again. Open. Okay, it will show us not only the bandwidth that's in use and the current allocation of bandwidth, but it'll show it cumulatively across sites. In our example, it will dynamically change which sites we're looking at, but it will also tell us that it's not configured because it's not on. But it'll tell us that right here. And there we go. Call Mission Control is not enabled. You won't see anything happen here because they're not enabled, but you will be able to see things happen. It's an interesting app because it's pulling and it dynamically changes its values and its configuration while you're in it. So if I come to my Redmond pool, I can see as it pulls, there we go, that authentication is happening. Authentication has to do with MRAS, so we are talking back to our authenticated Edge server. So PD auth is working between Edge, between the pools, things are happy. And on our second server, it's authenticated as well, things are happening, but there's no peer types matching. We're not actually enabled, so nothing's working. If I look at our topology, we will see the stuff we've set up, but one thing you'll notice is there's no region-to-region limitation, and that's because it won't even show up here because we set it to none. Right? So if we want something to show up, we have to create something. So here shows, within this example, our various communications from Redmond in North America. Audio bandwidth use, 0. Video bandwidth use, 0. And everything goes on its merry way. Okay. And it's owned by PDP. That's important. Things will refresh and get their way. If PDP doesn't own it, then things don't work. On this one, we'll see that Rome owns the bottom one and it doesn't own the top region link. And so they're backwards. They're flip-flopped, right? So which server owns which PDP communications and management. It's up to him to manage his bucket versus it's up to the other pool to manage his bucket. Okay, so now let's go ahead and we are going to enable PDP. That's not what I want. That's what I want. Okay, and remember, that's back on our global tab. And a couple things you'll notice here. If I enable call admission control, we get our little warning saying, hey, that means media bypass cannot be used because you've globally enabled call admission control, right? Now, you could, in theory, not put any subnets within this environment and then click enable bypass. And then, in theory, you have now enabled bypass for all. But if you don't have subnets in here, you don't have call admission control either. So none of that's working. But anyway, if you weren't using Call Admission Control, you could potentially do always bypass. But again, that's a really one-off scenario where it's not normal. So that's not going to be your typical implementation. Okay, so we're going to enable Call Admission Control. We're going to commit that. When we do, once again, we will see within the event logs that things are being updated, adapters are being initiated, calls are now being monitored, so that things vary once we start watching Call Admission Control, because the services themselves are now involved in basically every call. We're now flowing to make sure a validation check, even if the validation is just these are two calls between the same site, so we're not going to be involved, right? So let's see, the other thing we want to typically add, and we will here, because we have an edge in this environment, is let's figure out, I don't know, what his IP is. Missed it. And, nope, doesn't want to come up. Hold on. This is wonderful. It's because we disconnected. He was fooling me. Here I thought he wasn't grabbing it because I couldn't grab it. He wasn't grabbing because he wasn't really connected to grab. Okay, as this comes back, ever so slowly, we will refresh here and see what we've gotten on our event logs perspective. And look, all of a sudden policy is enabled and audio-video conferencing is now being managed and monitored by the conferencing service by Call Admission Control. Mediation server is also now being managed and monitored, which it wasn't before. And of course, it's saying everything's good to go. We're talking to things. Things are enabled. Things are working in Redmond. You also notice we talk about establishing connections to the inner cluster, but we don't manage the inner cluster. So if we come back to our monitor, and it should be updated automatically, but we'll do it anyway, and look at machine info. Ooh, we have an inner cluster and we have an edge. So we know that Rome has an edge he's talking to and an inner cluster that he's talking to. If we look at the Redmond pool, we see the same edge, because the ID is the same, but we have two different intercluster communications happening. So we have communication between FEO1 and FEO2, and FEO1 and FEO3, and then on 2, it'll be 2 to 1 and 2 to 3. Awesome. Okay, so that's all working like we would expect. That's a good thing so far in our demo. Okay.
Things are working good.
So far. Okay, there we go. Let's see how we configure this. I don't know. That's a very good question. So let's go back to our topology builder and see what we've set our external to be, because I don't know. There we go. We have the edge server. He's the 172 address. So we're also not theoretically adding. So 172.16.123.12. Let's go ahead and add that to our control panel, because again, that is tied to a particular site. So we'll go to our subnets. And this is where we're adding the AV edge's IP, 172 something, what was it? 172.
16.
Whoops. Something. 123.12. Because we're pod 123. Okay, and then from a mask, this is where we do 32-bit. 32-bit is equivalent to 255, 255, 255, 255, or just this IP. It's not a range, it's a single IP. And we're going to tie that to the Redmond site, because again, that makes sense, right? The other thing that we want to look at is, do we have an edge server in Rome? And if so, we want to add it as well, and we do not. So he's leveraging the edge services like we saw, because he was the same name as far as we were premised within the application of the edge 01. So that would mean, in theory, anything coming out of Rome that used the edge would be able to realize he's going through the edge and allocate bandwidth accordingly, based off the fact that it's going from Rome to, okay, here we go. Now, as this kind of gels, we want to go ahead and make that site link, because this didn't dynamically show what we wanted, because we left it unconfigured in the region links. So let's go ahead and set our region link that currently has no bandwidth specified to wireless. And when we do so, not instant, things have to propagate and get pulled up, but this diagram will actually show it dynamically once it grabs it. So, it's been told there's a change, new information is coming down the pipe. As it processes it, we will see new communication types, and instead of being site to region, will be region communications. Data is still received, we're still sending, everything's still going like we'd expect it to. Okay. Still waiting. Come on, update Vince. While that's going, we can show that things aren't going to happen yet. And that is, if I come down to client two, and make a call to client three. And then we come back to our server that we were watching it on. Nothing is showing up as being captured, which it should have been if it was going from its inner region link. Now we now have an inner region link which says anything from North America to EMEA. Now remember, North America contains multiple different sites. In this case, Redmond is in North America and Rome is in EMEA. So that would, in theory, say any call from Redmond to Rome or Rome to Redmond should have a bandwidth limitation. We do not. If we look at the Rome pool, we would see something similar because, again, it's conversely coming. It's a parallel duplicate on one side of, from another. Okay, so let's go ahead and now that things are in place, try to make this call again. And okay, and you'll also notice if you're watching this live, even though I'm making a call, nothing would ever happen until I accepted the call because we haven't actually allocated. Remember from the diagrams, but this is still just a request. It's not until I actually accept the request that I go and make the check to see can I make the call to let this happen. But once I make the call and media is flowing, that's when the allocation happens. And of course it doesn't show because we're not actually using the links and the IP addresses and the things that we said we were going to be using. But that's okay. More important is just to show that theoretically this should work. And the updates happen, your bandwidth used, and it will show your limit. Once it's at the limit, it'll hit 1024 if that's physically what you were at. If you had some way to get around that limit, or if you had bypass on, you could actually get negative. Those actual buckets can go in the opposite way because you've told it to overextend itself using some sort of bypass methodology. And when you're doing so, you're still using buckets. You just don't have the buckets to, well, either your bucket's smaller than it really should be, or you're overutilizing your network. Okay, so that is call and mission control in a nutshell and how it would work. If you all had separate networks. And again, in the event of something not working correctly, your emergency stop to make sure calls get out, simply go into global, disable call mission control, and within a matter of minutes, it's going to push out to all of the communications, to all of the servers that, hey, we're no longer playing with call mission control and we're done. So we can create. With that, what time do we have? We are going to do a quick break. Normal 10-minute break, and once we're done with the break, we're going to come back. Rui's going to have a quick session on devices, and then we're going to take our meal break. So, everybody stick around, and we'll be right back.
See you in a bit.